Good day to all of you. I'd like us to just pause for a moment of seeking the Lord's direction specifically for my own need here. I feel a little bit scattered, like a piece of paper here and a piece of paper here and a few more here. Let's bow our heads and pray. Father, this morning we just want your message to come through clearly to us as to how you view these things and how you see our own hearts. Father, how you relate to us in personal ways and where you want us to go in personal ways. The things that you're speaking to us through the work of your Spirit, Lord, we want to open up our hearts to those things and want to be channels that you have freedom to accomplish your purpose in this morning. Bless us, we pray, in Jesus' name. Amen. The Lord bless you, young people, for being here this morning, being here today. I think that these kinds of times are profitable for us when we just kind of zero in on the things of life that touch us closely, and we don't have to worry about who all's out there listening in. I'm glad to be alive today. Turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 11, if you would. I think God intends for us to love life. Do you love life? All young people love life, whether they raise their hands or not, I think. All of you, at least. All right, sometimes we love life for a variety of reasons. Sometimes we love life because things have gone well the day before. Sometimes we love life because we got the deal that we wanted in negotiating the price for a vehicle or in looking for a piece of material. Or, you know, there's little things like that that make us temporarily buoyant in life. But then what really makes you love life goes a lot deeper than that, right? What is it that takes you through the things when the bad deal comes? There's more to loving life than just those little things, isn't it? But look at Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verse 7. Truly the light is sweet, and a pleasant thing it is for the eyes to behold the sun. But if a man live many years and rejoice in them all, yet let him remember the days of darkness, for they shall come and be many. All that cometh is vanity. I found it interesting that those words light in verse 7 and darkness in verse 8 actually refer specifically to life and death. So now let's look at it again. Truly, life is sweet. It's a pleasant thing for the eyes to behold the sun. We're alive today. Look at the blue sky. It's a pleasant thing. God intended for us to appreciate life. And you look around you at all that God has created, and there's so much beauty and intricacy and wonder in all that He has done. And He did it just for the fun of it? Almost, I think. I think He loves that kind of variety. He did it to give us enjoyment in it. He did it finally to glorify His name. But He made life a very pleasant thing. But if a man live many years, Solomon says here, and rejoice in them all, yet let him remember that the days of death, and the thought there is that there are many more than what life is. There are many more than what life is. Oh, why do you have to throw that in the picture, Solomon? We enjoy life. We love life. We're enthused about life. We have so much out ahead of us, so much to anticipate, so much to look forward to. And then think about it in our day. You know, what if you were born in 1850? We wouldn't be having this topic, would we? We wouldn't need it. But today, with all of the innovation, with all of the handy things, all of the gadgetry, all of the conveniences, you know, what a wonderful time to be alive. And I don't say that sarcastically. I think it is. So remember, though, in the light of all that you think is wonderful about life, remember that those days are numbered, and we don't know what the number is, right? I've had about, close to 48 years worth of those days, and some of you have had closer to 20 years worth of those days, and we have no idea what the number of those days will be for us, but our days are numbered. We know that. God knows the number, and He's got that number. They're numbered. And the number of days after life is eternity. The number of days after my days is eternity. And so He says, remember the days of darkness, and there are many more than the days of life, the days of death, many more than the days of life. So, verse 9, rejoice, O young man, in thy youth. Let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth, and walk in the ways of thine heart, and in the sight of thine eyes. But know thou that for all these things God will bring thee into judgment. So you may choose to follow your heart. We're talking about a heart after God's heart, and you may choose to follow your heart. But understand that there is something that I will not have the option to choose. And that is that I will give account for what I choose during my days. I will give account for the way that I use my days, the choices that I make. Therefore, remove sorrow from thy heart and put away evil from thy flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity. And there again, the thought of that is that they pass quickly. Youth goes so quickly. It just flies by night. The days come so quickly that, drop down to chapter 12. When your teeth aren't going to work right, when your eyes aren't going to work right, when your ears aren't going to work right, when your limbs aren't going to work right, when your voice isn't going to work right. Oh, but that's way out there. Well, I don't know how Jason feels. I think he's the oldest one here this morning. I don't know how he feels about all those things, the eyes and the teeth. I think he's functioning pretty well still. That's from my perspective. But I think he would confirm for us how fast the days pass. How soon the energy and keenness of sense physically tapers off. Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. Let's think about that verse for just a moment. Remember now thy Creator. Why Creator? Why does he use the word Creator? No, remember thy God. Remember your Father. Remember thy Creator. God isn't called Creator in the Old Testament very often at all. But here Solomon says, remember your Creator. Remember who made you. Remember that you are His by right because He made you. Remember that because He made you, He knows more about you than anybody else, even than yourself. Now, you think about it for a moment. Something you've made. Think about something you've made. And your friend comes up to you and says something about that thing you've made that is totally inaccurate. That thing is made out of alder. And no, you know it's not alder. You know it's balsa wood or it's something else. Well, why do you get a little defensive about that thing? Because you've made it. You know it from start to beginning. You built this little contraption, this little science invention, this dress, this covering. Whatever it is, you've made it yourself. So you know the details of it. And you know more about it than anyone else because from A to Z, you've built that thing. And remember now thy Creator. Because God built you. God put in you the emotions and feelings and thought processes, the capabilities that you have. God put those things within you. And He knows all about them. And He gives us instruction. And then I choose to do my own thing. God says, what? You don't think I know what you need here? You don't think I know what's best for you? Remember now thy Creator. Remember. Keep Him in mind. You know, youthfulness brings with it a good memory. And someone does something nice for you. Someone comes up to you and they put their arm around you and they give you kind words at a time when you need it in your life. Someone goes with you and accompanies you on a venture that's difficult, intimidating for you. You don't want to go alone. And somehow this person felt they came along with you. Anyway, the kindness. You appreciate it. You remember it. You remember that kindness. And it develops a relationship with that person. And you think about it. Your Creator. What has your Creator done for you? Think about all He's given to you. You sit here and you enjoy this thing of vision. You enjoy the thing of being able to hear. You enjoy the thing of being able to manipulate things with your fingers very quickly. Just watch yourself text sometime. God has given you so much ability. He's done so many wonderful things for you. And it is so easy in life to forget Him. So easy to forget Him. Remember Him. Remember what He's done. Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, a time of vigor, a time of activity, a time of enjoyment. Think about what all you can accomplish for God now that will be very difficult for you in the future. Oh, but the years will come when... No, remember now. Today is the only day we're promised to have, right? And you may think that age will benefit you in every way, but what does Solomon say here? He really comes down on that thing. He says, don't wait. Don't wait and think that you're going to be mature around the corner somewhere. You know, just around the bend of 25. Just around the bend of 30. Just around the bend of marriage. Just around the bend of whatever event you might think will just make a difference in your life. And all of a sudden, you will have the stamina to stand. And you'll have courage to do differently than the bad habits or track record of the past. And you will make choices that will make a change in your life. What are the things that you think will come that will all of a sudden change that for you? Age, maturity. It's all out there in the future. And the wise man Solomon says, don't think of it that way. Don't think of it that way. With age comes weakness. With age comes many fears. With age comes rutted patterns. Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth. While the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. Today. Don't wait for tomorrow. Now, I don't come to you this morning, young people, as a techie person with a lot of knowledge and having things figured out. I come to you this morning with a little bit of knowledge. I come with a lot of passion for what is right. I also come with a heart that is human, and I come wanting to say this morning that I know my moments of failure. I know what it's like. To have desire, little bit of desire, down underneath. No, I didn't mean to get here, but somehow my desire brought me here. And desire makes for... How many of you heard a message on desire within the last month? Raise your hands. How many of you were at Bible school? Okay, there we go. Now you heard a message on desire. Think a little bit more. Brother Dan had a message on desires, chapel talk that I had opportunity to listen to, and I appreciated that. We'll talk a little more about desires in a bit. There are so many things as relates to technology that move right along. How do we deal with... I don't keep up with it. I'm not anywhere near as knowledgeable about most of the technological advancements that are out there and all the games and all the other things. I don't probably know half what most of you know. That's fine. So, I don't want to miss the things that are important for you because of my ignorance. But I'd like us to think about our heart. Before we do that, I'd like us to have just a little bit of an exercise here. How many of you have your phones with you this morning? Just raise your hands. Okay. It's a Saturday. I kind of expect you to have your phones with you. I brought mine for this purpose. I usually don't bring it into a church building. My phone usually stays out in the vehicle. But I brought along this morning because I want my phone to join your phones. Can we go through a little exercise this morning? If you have your phone with you, would you bring it and just lay it on the table? They'll be safe. Don't worry about it. They'll be safe. They'll probably be enough different that we'll be able to keep them separate. May have to turn some of them on to keep them, to identify them, but probably not. How's it feel? You know, our phones are so much a part of us that if it's not with you, you're probably not prepared for the day, right? What happens if you go to work and you leave your phone at home? Disaster could almost strike. When I was the age of most of you, the cell phones in my day were these big boxy things that you'd leave in the vehicle. You wouldn't think about hanging on your belt. And they... Well, the prices I remember, I'm sure they probably tapered off, but the prices I remember were in the $900 to $1,500 range on the low end, and then you kind of go up from there. Now, I had a little note here, a little statistic. In the U.S., youngsters, and I think by youngsters we're talking about 12 to 16 in that age. In the U.S., about 37% of youngsters have one of these. And in Korea, about 64%. So, you know, maybe if we were in Korea having this talk, there'd be double the phones there. There might be. But do you feel a little vulnerable? Your phone is up here where I could turn it on and I could play with it a little. If I started messing with these phones, you'd probably flock up here, right? I'm not going to mess with your phones. All right. We'll come back to these. I'd like us to think just a little bit about our hearts for a moment. Proverbs 4:23 says, let's say it together, keep thy heart with all diligence. Together? Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are, together, the issues of life. All right, the wise man Solomon didn't speak to our age, and he didn't say, keep thy phone with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. But could you say that? You know, if I took your phone, some of you don't have your phones here, but if I took your phone and I opened it up, and I went back through the text you sent last week, and I went back through maybe the emails, if you can receive emails on your phone, if I looked at your contact and knew all the people in your contact list, how much would I understand about your heart? How much would I understand about your heart? These things get pretty personal to us, right? They get pretty personal to us. How many of you, and you don't have to raise your hand to this, but how many of you would be fine with Brother Steve and Brother Leland and Brother Dan coming up here and checking out your phones? Be good with that? Would you feel violated? And then, why would you feel violated? Maybe there's some legitimate violated feelings to have in relation to that. But why would you? What would the reason be? Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. A few things about the heart. And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually in Noah's day. From Genesis chapter 6, verses 5 and 6, and it repented the Lord that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him at his heart. Why did it grieve him at his heart? Because the thoughts and imaginations of man's heart, the desire and the contemplation was evil continually. When the thoughts of my heart grieve the heart of God, he is not in possession of my heart. When the thoughts of man, when your thoughts grieve the heart of God, he's not in possession of your heart. He's not in control. When your thought process grieves him. Numbers chapter 15, verses 39 to 41, and it shall be unto you for a fringe, that ye may look upon it, and remember all the commandments of the Lord to do them, that ye seek not after your own heart and your own eyes, after that ye used to go warring, that ye may remember and do all my commandments, and be holy unto your God. I am the Lord your God, which brought you up out of the land of Egypt. To be your God, I am the Lord your God. Numbers 15, 39 to 41. You can study that passage, but there we have an ordinance that God design for the people of Israel, that there would be a fringe around their garments so that when they see that thing, it would remind them whose they were. God says this fringe is to remind you that you're mine and that your heart is to be a heart that is in pursuit of my heart. External help, external reminders. We too are advantaged by physical reminders. There's the passwords. There's the filters. There's the screensaver notes. There's the sticky note that you can stick on your mirror in the morning. There's the screen on your phone that is quite easily designed. Do you have a reminder on there? So when you open that thing up, it triggers. And whatsoever you do, do all to the glory of God. Think about reminders. Ways you can remind yourself. Checkpoints. Physical things that you do to help yourself be safe. Don't take advantage of what you think is your own personal strength. Reminders of others. Someone tapping on your shoulder. All right? There are things we do. There are precautions we take to remind us. Those things are right and good. Do not scoff at those things. They're for our good. Deuteronomy 4:29. But if from thence thou shalt seek the Lord thy God, thou shalt find him, if you seek him with all thy heart and with all thy soul. We know that God says, if you seek me, you'll find me. Let's just understand this morning that much of the perplexity about what is right and wrong in this thing of technology is not because God doesn't make himself clear. It's because we're dealing with the desires of our flesh. Most of the time when we are confused about right and wrong as relates to these things, we're dealing with the desires and surrender in our own heart. Much of the complexity and confusion boils right down to there. God is clear. Deuteronomy 36, 30 verse 6. And the Lord thy God will circumcise thine heart and the heart of thy seed to love the Lord thy God with all thy heart. You know, if we want a heart after God, are we willing to let him take his scalpel and cut away at our flesh? I appreciate the devotional that we had this morning. Are you daring to be different? Are you willing to draw the line, even though nobody else right close to you draws the line there? God speaks to you. You feel tempted. You feel weakness in a particular area. Don't require everyone else to take the safeguard for your weakness that you feel you should take. No, take your safeguard for your weakness. And don't demand it of somebody else. But you know your weakness. You know where you slip most often. Take the safeguard. Let God circumcise your heart. Let him cut away at that flesh. Can we deny ourselves? For where your treasure is, Jesus said in Matthew 6:21, there will your heart be also. What are you wrapped up in? The thing that consumes us, the thing that wraps up around our lives, is our treasure. Jesus further said in Matthew 11:29, take my yoke upon you and learn of me. For I am meek and lowly in heart. Lowliness of heart. Another condition of heart that will be a safeguard for you in the use of technology. Lowliness of heart. So somebody comes and taps you on your shoulder, and your first reaction, your first response is resistance. You know, what are you talking to me about this for? What about this in your life? Or, you know, what right have you to tell me not to use this? Meekness and lowliness of heart. A lowly heart will be a protection for you. Can you be told something by someone trying to help you? To do something that you don't think you need to do? And will you do it? Meekness and lowliness of heart. Someone's looking out for you. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. If your heart would belong to God, it must be a pure heart. Answer the question, who shall ascend unto the hill of the Lord, or who shall stand in his holy place? Together. Who hath not lifted up his soul unto vanity, nor sworn deceitfully? Clean hands and a pure heart. Heart speaks to the desire. Hands speak to the action. Purity of heart. But I haven't done anything. My hands are clean. But what about the desire of my heart? Who shall ascend unto the hill of the Lord? It's not which is a prelude to which. If your hands are clean, does it mean you have a clean heart? We understand it doesn't mean that, does it? It just simply means that I'm at the stage of life or at the stage of my situation where I've been able to keep it restrained or keep it concealed so that you don't know. I haven't done anything. But the desire of my heart will finally produce actions, right? It'll finally produce a lifestyle. We must reach deeper than just the hands. A clean hand and a pure heart. How much is your purity worth to you? What do you give in exchange for it? A YouTube video? A sensuous text? What will you give in exchange for your purity? A cyber relationship? An email? A random hour of web surfing? What will you give in exchange for your moral purity? Who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord? Who will get close enough to God to know his heart? He that hath clean hands and a pure heart. Your technology. A tool or a toy? 2 Timothy chapter 2. Second Timothy chapter 2 talks about conditions of the last days. Chapter 3, rather. Chapter 3, let's just read verses 2 and 3. 2 and 5, actually, is what I wanted. For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy. Let's read on, verse 3. Without natural affection, truce-breakers, false accusers, innocent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God, having a form of godliness, denying the power thereof. From such, turn away. Lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God. Philippians 3:19. 18 and 19, for many walk of whom I have told you often, and now tell you even weeping that they are the enemies of the cross of Christ, whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly, whose glory is their shame. That's an interesting phrase. The thing that they glory in is really the thing that is to their shame, is the thing that makes them finally ashamed. Who mind earthly things. The passage that Brother Louis ended with last evening in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 5 and following, with many of them God was not well pleased. These things were written for our examples, to the intent we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted, neither be idolaters as were some of them. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Neither let us commit fornication, as some of them committed. And we could go back to the Old Testament. We could look at the times when Israel sat down to eat and drink and play. there when Moses was on Mount Sinai. And the immorality that happened at those times. I say it's often within the attitude of play and recreation that these devices become snares to us. Tools or toys. What is your perspective when you go to AT&T or to Verizon and you look for the phone that you want? Well, now it doesn't matter so much because most of these phones, you could, not quite all of them, most of them you could get almost any app you wanted and could turn it into a full-fledged toy box. What's your plan? A tool or a toy? In the context of play, much sin happens. I think we need to readjust our perspective regarding the place and priority of pleasure in our lives. We're so used to doing things that please us. So we choose, and there's nothing wrong with choosing the vehicle that pleases you, choosing the house when you go to purchase a place, choosing the clothes as long as they're within the standard that your parents and your church, the expectations that they have. You know, we choose the things that please us. We choose colors we appreciate. We choose, all right? We're so used to pleasing that do we know where we draw the line? At what point is pleasure, at what point does pleasure consume us? At what point does pleasure become the focal point of our decisions? Think about it a little. How are your decisions? How much priority does the pleasure this thing will give you have to do with what you have and the apps you download? In our generation, even society has taken a closer look at what's happening to our brains because of these tools that are geared to do the thinking for us and provide the entertainment for us. Those two things are the focal point in the development of these tools. And go farther than phones. Maybe it's your tablet. Maybe it's your computer. There's much more than just phones to be thought about in the process of this. But phones are no longer just phones, right? It's a tool. It's an access to all of your email. It's an access to the host of information that is available on the web. It's access to all of your friends' comments all the way across the country on any social networking site that they find themselves or you find yourself. It's much more than a phone. And so we're not talking just about, hello, how are you, when we talk about phones. They all have their devices, their apps, their programs. They're designed to contribute to your experience of pleasure in using the device. They want to do the thinking for us, and they want to provide us with entertainment. And as people, as our world even looks at this and what's happening to the brain, science isn't liking what they find. Doctors are not liking what they find because it's making lazy people of us, for one thing. It's exposing us to a much broader spectrum of people and relationships to the point that, and we want to talk about this a bit more, to the point that people are having a hard time being able to develop relationships because relationships now are... Well, a comment from the Time magazine, popular culture is this: it's friendship, not love, that lasts forever. And this was in relation to meeting up with someone as a result of social cyber life. It's friendship, not love, that lasts forever. And that's the way relationships are going. Very shallow, very surface. Be satisfied with that kind of relationship and never know how to really open up your heart to somebody. And you get a couple of young people in that kind of environment, socially and mentally, and they come together and they form a marriage union, and these tools are still their own private little world, and they hardly know how to interact on a level beyond the six words of the text. They hardly know how to interact beyond that. Now, that's a stretch for us, I sure hope. But that's what this is developing. That's where this is taking our society. And we are not exempt to the pressures of it, nor are we free from the consequences of it. All right. Technological advancements. They hold value to us. They help us accomplish tasks. And we utilize those. I don't think there's anything wrong in utilizing them properly. But just because it can be a tool doesn't mean that a wrong thing is right. Just because it can be a tool. Nor does just because an item can be a tool justify it becoming a toy. You know, well, I got to have it for this, so. We have to somehow sort through those things. We need to weigh the potential in our lives in personal ways. The potential of danger versus the potential of benefit. You know, your moms get a loaf of bread that's been sitting in the bread box on the counter for a couple days too long, and there's a little corner of mold on it. And she takes out, and there's a little corner with mold on it. She takes out that loaf and she cuts off that end of the loaf, and you eat the rest for breakfast, and you never know the difference. But there's another loaf that's sat out in the compost bin and the garbage pile, and it's covered with mold. And your mom isn't going to go out there some morning when she forgot to get bread out of the freezer and cut off six sides of that thing and get the little center core that hopefully hasn't been touched. I'm going to serve you toast with your eggs that morning. Your mom isn't going to do that. Technology is a lot that way. There are places and times when we will take a tool and we will utilize it. We may have to cut a corner off of it. There may be something that we will weed out, we will block, we will turn off. We will password it. We will choose to be accountable to somebody as to how we're using it. Because it has value to us, but we recognize the potential for danger. We'll cut off the end of it and we'll utilize it. But don't take something that's covered and wrapped in mold and say, well, there's a little bit of good here. And I would just challenge us as to our perspectives of some of these things. Take YouTube videos, for example. Or take your favorite social networking site, if you do that. And you think about the good that, well, you know, it's a chance to communicate with, so yeah, right. Right. But what do I really do with it? And what does it really do with me? Where does it really take me? So do we cut off two layers of mold on all six sides and have 1-inch cylinder in the center of good and think that it's going to taste good? Sit down and enjoy it. No, for the presence of all the mold, you can't enjoy it, right? Let it be that way in technology. Let it be that way. For all the filth that is there, I'll go back to YouTube videos, for example. Why keep going back to enjoy the ones that are okay? What are you feeding in your life? Think a moment about courteous or convenient. A tool or a toy. Now, a courteous or convenient in relation to technology. You know, sometimes we talk about the good old-fashioned hospitality, and we could look at a number of scriptures in relation to this. But let me just use this one. And be ye kind one to another. We'll stop there with it. And be ye kind one to another. Have you ever sat in a conversation with somebody and you hear the vibration go and the person uses their phone and, oh, lost them. There they are. Oh, sorry. Put it back in. What were you saying? Have you ever been in the middle of a conversation or a group of young people where you felt like most of their friends were all of these people out here that they knew a little something about from whatever they gained through their social networking? And I'm not going to name, I mean, we could name Facebook, we could name, I couldn't, you could, 20 social networking sites. We could come up with more than that probably between us. And then we have things that are much more innocent like Google Plus and a few other things. Are we using those things for the honor and glory of God? How is it? Have you ever wished that someone would pay a little more attention to what's going on around them rather than the last blog they read? Have you ever wished that someone would get as close to you as they seem to be to someone 4,000 miles away? What does it do to relationships? You know, it's not so hard for me to keep my Google group fooled as to who I am. That's not too hard. I can post things on Facebook or any other site for the world to see that represent me. What are you going to post? The dark little secrets of your heart? You're not going to post the real you there. But you know what? The real you ends up showing up there. It's so easy to be somebody you're not with all of the far relationships. You can have such good relationships with somebody out there. And things suffer right here. Well, I don't believe that social networking enables your social skills. And use has proved it on the commercial scene. As people look at it, they're concerned. Out there, they're concerned. I think many Christians, and I think many Mennonites, are being swept off their feet with the thrill being able to communicate with so many people at once. We love to visit. We love to talk. We know people all across the country. We have connections like most people don't have. You understand that? Go to your neighbors and see how many people they know in Pennsylvania, New York, and Maryland, and Virginia, and Indiana, and Ohio, and Wisconsin, and every one of you could probably name people that you know in those states, or more. Right? But go to your neighbors and ask them. They don't know people in those kind of states. A few here and a few there. We have connections that other people don't know anything about because of our Mennonite culture. And if you want to find out what all the ex-Mennonites think about you, visit some social networking sites. You can find out a lot of information. A lot of information. And all of a sudden, I hope that you're soured by the way that thing works. Oh, but we can use it in a good way. Make sure that you're not taking the moldy loaf of bread and settling for the few crumbs in the center. Make sure. One more thought in relation to technology. Advantaged or addicted? Solomon talks about the vanity of the exploration of all of man's doings in Ecclesiastes 1:13, and he says, you can check out all this stuff. You can go here and you can go there, and you can understand all of these things that man has concocted and come up with. And it all is, I gave my heart to search and seek out wisdom concerning all the things that are done under heaven. This is sore travail that God hath given to the sons of men to be exercised therewith. Sore travail is where he ended up as he explored all of those things. What do you measure the quality of your life by? What do you measure the quality of your life by? What are you spending your time with? Redeeming the time because the days are evil is another whole subject in this thing of technology. In relation to gaming and videoing and all of the things that are available in that whole process. Redeeming the time because the days are evil. What are you profiting yourself? Do all to the glory of God. I can't name the games that TJ named, but play to the glory of God. Careful where you go with that. Because we have sports people who are playing to the glory of God, right? They're praying out there in the field. And you try to mix your Christianity. You try to mix your God in your life with these other things to try to justify them. And does the game become right? Do you, when you mix that, when you mix a solution, you're going to end up with one overcoming the other. Which is going to overcome which? Are you going to turn what is detrimental into your life into something that is spiritually profitable? Or are you going to take what is spiritual life to you, and is that going to become less and less meaningful and less effective in your life because of the mix of the other things? Which is going to dilute? We understand which is going to dilute because we live in a world where the good always, if you're going to mix the two, the good is always diluted with the evil. the evil is not diluted with the good. It doesn't happen that way in our world because God said our world is tended to evil, to error, to deterioration. And it doesn't happen that way in our lives. We can't hope to make something that's not good for us better for us by coming up with some spiritual, scriptural reason to accommodate what our flesh is desiring. We could talk about web use, filtering, all of that. I'd like to close with a thought in relation to accountability. This will attach us to where we're going. I want to read a little poem here. How many of you know the poem "A Fence or an Ambulance"? All right, I'll go ahead and read it. I thought if enough of you knew it, I'd skip reading it. "'Twas a dangerous cliff, as they freely confessed, though to walk near its crest was so pleasant. But over its terrible edge there had slept a duke and full many a peasant. So the people said something would have to be done, but their projects did not all tally. Some said, put a fence around the edge of the cliff, some an ambulance down in the valley. But the cry for the ambulance carried the day, for it spread through the neighboring city. A fence may be useful or not, it's true, but each heart became brimful of pity for those who slipped over that dangerous cliff. And the dwellers in highways and alley gave pounds or pence not to put up the fence, but an ambulance down in the valley. For the cliff is all right if you're careful, they said, and if folks even slip and are dropping, it isn't slipping that hurts them so much as the shock down below when they're stopping. So day after day, as these mishaps occurred, quick forth would these rescuers sally to pick up the victims who fell off the cliff with their ambulance down in the valley. Then an old sage remarked, it's a marvel to me that people give far more attention to repairing results than to stopping the cause when they'd much better aim at prevention. Let us stop at its source, all this mischief, cried he. Come, neighbors and friends, let us rally. If the cliff we will fence, we might almost dispense with the ambulance down in the valley. Oh, he's a fanatic, the others rejoined. Dispense with the ambulance? Never. He'd dispense with all charities, too, if he could. No, no, we'd support them forever. Aren't we picking up folks just as fast as they fall? And shall this man dictate to us? Shall he? Why should people of sense stop to put up a fence when the ambulance works in the valley? But a sensible few who are practical, too, will not bear with such nonsense much longer. They believe that prevention is better than cure, and their party will soon be the stronger. Encourage them, then, with your purse, voice, and pen. And while other philanthropists dally, they will scorn all the pretense and put up a stout fence on the cliff that hangs over the valley. Better guide well the young that reclaims them when old, for the voice of true wisdom is calling. To rescue the fallen is good, but 'tis best to prevent other people from falling. Better close up the source of temptation and crime than deliver from dungeon or galley. Better put up a strong fence around the top of a cliff than an ambulance down in the valley. And I would like to suggest that the fence, in the context of our topic, is accountability. Accountability. Accountability to how we use these things. Accountability in our internet usage. Accountability in games we play, the things we let pass across our vision. And we love to be accountable to God. We know that all of us will give account to God. But remember that God, in his program of accountability with people, when he called Achan on the carpet, he called him on the carpet through Moses. When he called Ananias and Sapphira on the carpet, he called them on the carpet through Peter and John. Go down the list. When he called David on the carpet, he called David on the carpet through the prophet Nathan. And all of these men that were used in the process of accountability were men with their own failures too. Their own set of problems. Are you willing to give account? Don't excuse the process of accountability because, well, you're giving account to someone else who's human and has their failures too. Be willing to give account. You will be called into account through the channel of people. Listen up. Respond, don't react. Appreciate the perspective. Bridge the generation gap. We'll talk more about that later. All right, you'll help yourself to your phone.